Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And on this episode, we are speaking with Elizabeth Filippulli, the Chief Executive Officer and founder of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum. She's also a graduate of Oxford University and London City University. Her background's in journalism, having worked for both Al Jazeera English and CNN. Elizabeth, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. It is a pleasure to be with you.
And you have done some truly amazing things, not counting even your accolades in journalism. But most importantly, we're on the precipice, I think, of one of the most exciting events that we've seen in the region. It's an iconic event that's peppered with royalty and some of the most powerful people in the world, debatably. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Indeed, of course. We are very excited about our event. I think it would be fair to say that it is the most special event in Dubai this year. We're celebrating the excellence of Arab women. Arab women as change makers, as leaders. In a lavish award ceremony, which will open with a live concert that will mark and commemorate the 43rd National UAE Day. We're actually bringing from Belgium a world-acclaimed maestro, Sir Dirk Brosset, and two sopranos and a pianist. So we will open this very special evening with a live concert. And then we're having CNN's Becky Anderson as a master of ceremony. Am I impressing you?
It's unbelievable. And I think you haven't even talked about the princesses, which are attending as well.
Indeed, yes. We're having some of the most powerful Arab women with us. Her Excellency Sheikh Halubna Al Qasimi is honoring us with her presence, and she has accepted to do the opening speech. We are having Her Royal Highness Princess Sumaya bint Al Hassan from Jordan, who is also on our advisory board. Her Excellency Raja Al Ghurk, she's also with us. Dr. Sheikha Al Maskari from Abu Dhabi. Muna Abu Sulaiman from Saudi Arabia, a very well-known media persona, a philanthropist, a businesswoman. We're also having with us Raha Moharak. She's the first Saudi woman who climbed on Mount Everest.
Wow.
And about 15 very, very special Arab women leaders who are receiving awards in different categories, like excellence in global thinking, in leadership, in innovation, positive change, science, cultural creativity, cultural understanding. Sheikh Hamayasa of Qatar, she will receive the award for excellence in cultural understanding because of her work with the Qatar Museum Authority and everything she has been doing over the past 10 plus years to promote collaboration and understanding, cultural understanding through arts.
Unbelievable. So how old is this forum and how long have you been doing this for? Because it seems like you can't just put something like this on overnight.
Very true. Interestingly, we are quite young.
Okay.
We launched in 2012. But truth be told, Shane, it's a concept on which we have been working on for 5 years before launching. So I would say that everything started in 2007. So we started putting a network of international leaders and decision makers and forward thinkers together. The plan was to create an organization, a nonprofit think tank, that would gather the world's best minds and would promote understanding and at the same time promote empowerment, collaboration, entrepreneurship, and better leadership practices. So we started the work in 2007. This is why we felt we were ready to launch in 2012. We had a very strong basis by then. And we decided to make it very timely and very topical. At the time, it was just over a year after the Arab revolutions had begun. So the Arab world was, you know, in the headlines for this. And we thought, and when I say we, I'm referring to our team because it's a team of people that are working very dedicatedly and, you know, like 24/7 on to create what Global Thinkers Forum is today. So we thought that we need to understand and find ways to help women in the Arab region create more leading roles for themselves, because this is a crucial time for the entire Arab world. How can we take advantage of the talent and potential that exists among women and help them reposition their role and see how they can contribute to progress, development, to peacemaking? So we decided to do our first event in Jordan, in Amman. That was in 2012. The topic was Women Leaders, Power and Creativity. Women leaders in MENA, Middle East and North Africa, so that we covered the entire region. And we sent our official letter to Her Majesty Queen Rania, who embraced the initiative, and she gave us, she granted royal patronage, and she attended our event. We did an event which was over 2.5 days. So we had our welcome dinner, then we had our forum with our panels and our keynotes. Some of the most exceptional speakers in the Arab world were with us, like Fadi Gandour, companies like Google was there, Columbia University hosted us, Oasis 500 was with us as supporters. In the evening, we launched the awards for excellence. And then on the third day, we had a series of workshops which were open for free to students. And we discussed topics like fundraising for a startup, women in journalism and how they can protect themselves in war zones, women and social media. So a series of workshops that were very helpful to our audience and to a younger audience as well.
Well, many of the studies show that they say Arab women are more productive in the workforce. But what are some of the major stonewalls or challenges that women are facing in terms of realizing their professional goals?
Well, let me say this first. I'm Greek. And I always wanted to get to know the Arab world, you know, better and find an opportunity to actually live in the Middle East or in the Gulf. And this opportunity came for me in 2005 when Al Jazeera English gave me this proposal and, you know, said, would you like to move to Doha and would you like to join Al Jazeera English as a presenter and producer? Which I did. I'm a household name in Greece, so it was an interesting career leap and career transition. So from my life while I was in Qatar, I got to realize the many stereotypes that exist when it comes to women in the Arab world. That, you know, they are not, they are, you know, oppressed. They do not do things. Their husbands, you know, just dominate them. They don't work. They are not in business. They just stay at home. A number of absolutely stupid and non-existent cliches, which I felt, I thought I would like to take it on as a mission to change the world's perception. I mean, to the extent, you know, that I can and, you know, I could do. That this is absolutely, you know, a false reality, a non-existent reality. I have come across some of the most amazing and most intelligent, well-educated and successful women throughout my life in the Arab region. I think that Arab women are far more talented. They are very strong-willed. They're highly intelligent, and they're very successful, even, you know, more so than women who are already successful in the West.
But what? So if you're an Arab woman and you're trying, say, for example, you're in the bank, you want to become CEO, what are some of the challenges that, you know, these individuals or you're a woman, you want to become an entrepreneur, you want to be the next Fadi Gandour? Mm-hmm. What were some of the main hurdles? You're saying, from what you just said, that there are no hurdles for them. That, you know, it's really a misperception that the women are oppressed in the Middle East.
Yes, that is a misperception. However, the fact that women all around the world are underrepresented, I think that is a fact. So there is no real, you know, difference between what women achieve in the Arab world and what women achieve in the West, Or rather, I would say there are more success stories in the Arab world, you know, for women. But there are the glass ceilings that exist all around the world for women who want to become, you know, business owners or entrepreneurs or executives. So the things like, for example, gender equality or equal pay or equal opportunities or sexism. These are hurdles that exist for women all around the world. Also the fact that women look after their families. And so sometimes, even if they have decided to follow an executive career and they are quite successful at it, at some point, you know, they want to form a family. They want to have a family. So inevitably, the focus and the attention goes towards the child, you know, the husband, the family that they need to look after. And actually, this is more than a full-time job. This is more than the 9-to-5 job. It's like a 24/7 project and a very, very serious and demanding project because it is about bringing, you know, people up. So this is where they need, women need to make a decision as to whether they will keep pursuing a successful executive or, you know, entrepreneurial career, or if they will have to shift focus towards family.
This is Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and chief executive officer of Global Thinkers and the Global Thinkers Forum. We'll be hearing more of her insights on the plight of women in the Middle East in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here listening to Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and chief executive officer of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum. She is also a graduate of Oxford University and London City University. Her background is in journalism, having worked for both Al Jazeera English and CNN. Elizabeth, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. Nice to be with you.
You have had a very exciting career, and I guess journalism just by default is fairly exciting, more exciting than those desk jobs anyway. But was that a dream of yours to be a journalist, or how did your life kind of unfold?
Well, interestingly, no. I mean, I wanted to become a diplomat. And this is because I always had this desire to explore the world, to get to meet, you know, as many countries and different cultures as possible, and actually immerse into the culture, so live in a country and explore it from the inside, you know. But I come from a family of journalists and publishers, very well-known journalists in Greece. And so my father, my parents, they wanted me to become a journalist. And so when I started my studies at the university in Greece, when I was 18, I was already speaking three languages, English, Greek, of course, and German. And so they said, okay, Elizabeth, you've started with your studies, but you need to start work at the same time, because they wanted to get me, you know, into this mindset that someone who studies can work at the same time and perhaps earn a living, which is good. I mean, it's tiring when you're 18, but it's good and useful, you know, for later in life. And so although everyone expected that I would become a journalist following the path, you know, that my father and my uncle had already, you know, created for a few decades before, I thought, no, I want to become a diplomat, and it will just be a temporary thing, that I will just be a reporter for, you know, a few years until I complete my studies. But as you know, Shane, destiny sometimes has other plans for you. And so I decided to stay on in journalism when I realized myself how important and how exciting it is to uncover, you know, the truths, to bring people's stories to the spotlight, to interview people and give them a mic to discuss their issues, their problems, and perhaps, you know, sometimes if you can create some sort of justice, then this, I think, is the most, for me, rewarding part when it comes to journalism. So I worked with Greek media, I worked with radio, Greek television, newspapers. But I always, in the back of my head, had this dream that I would like to understand what is going on this planet. And so I decided to specialize on international affairs. And I decided to do as many trips, professional trips as possible, and pursue stories of international interest, both in order to bring them to the attention of the Greek audience, so cultivate more awareness around international affairs, and also because I thought it would be very interesting for me.
And you know, you have an amazing career as a journalist, and then your dream, I think, was creating this Global Thinkers Forum.
Very true, yes. Well, the eye-opener for me was when I joined CNN. I became a CNN fellow. I was trained in Atlanta, and that was, I'm saying, eye-opener, because for the first time, I came across an international organization which was like a Babel. So people from all over the world, journalists from all over the world, they were there producing, you know, what is... for some, you know, pioneering journalism. I mean, CNN, with all the controversies, because all media outlets are somehow one way or another controversial, as we know, and they have, you know, their friends and foes. It's a pioneer. Ted Turner revolutionized international media when he introduced the 24/7 news coverage in 1981. So becoming part of this was an eye-opener for me. And I thought, okay, this is what I want to do from here onwards. So my work with CNN as an Athens-based correspondent continued until 2007. By that time, I was already working with international organizations such as the International Olympic Committee, the Eurovision. So my career was progressing and growing. And I landed this proposal from Al Jazeera English, which was just about to launch its international news channel. Another eye-opener, another pioneer.
Isn't that also seen as slightly the nemesis to CNN or the antithesis? So when we watch a story unfold, we'll listen to CNN and then we'll immediately go to Al Jazeera to kind of get the other side of the story?
Yes, you could say so, indeed. but of course, there were other, and there are other, you know, very big players who are in the international media market. I mean, BBC World and Arabia, and of course, newcomers.
BBC and CNN would be more aligned, wouldn't they? Where you see Al Jazeera, and then you have RT on the other side.
Yes.
Trading blows. So was it seen as a defection when you switched?
Well, some people... could say so. But come to think about it, if we say that CNN revolutionized international media back in the early 80s because it introduced the 24/7 news, Al Jazeera revolutionized media in the Arab world. For the first time, we had an international network which is for the Arab world, based out of an Arab city, an Arab country, Qatar. So in the heart of the Middle East. And that, again, created, you know, a ripple throughout the Arab media. So it was very interesting to be part of both worlds and see, you know, how both worlds work from the inside. Of course, the international operation, Al Jazeera's international operation, was based on the foundation that the Arab Network created, which launched in 96. So the big success and the big credit goes to Al Jazeera Arabic, not Al Jazeera English.
Right. Excellent. So, and then at what point do you feel that, listen, I really want to make a contribution to the women in the Arab world?
Well, as I said in the beginning, when I lived in Qatar and I got to travel a lot, you know, in the Emirates, in Jordan, in Oman, so the wider region, Egypt, North Africa in general, I felt, you know, I came across these false perception and misinformation that goes out to the world. And so people have the wrong impression as to what is going on in the Arab world when it comes to women. And I felt that, you know, I need to do something to change these perceptions. As a journalist, you can do a lot. okay, with storytelling, with news reporting, with giving the mic to as many people as possible to express their views. But I felt that if I could create an organization that would actually do more by engaging on a permanent basis the world's top thinkers or some of the world's top thinkers, and we could create events and debates and invite people to participate and create workshops and seminars, then this can create perhaps more positive change and more empowerment than just news reporting. This is where I decided to go on with Global Thinkers Forum.
And I think, you know, any good idea also has to be from a commercial aspect sustainable, right? So is it that, you know, people pay sponsorship to be part of the event, or do you sell tickets, or how do you actually, because the cost is huge, especially when you have royalty attending your event. It's not like you can throw it up in the back room of your friend's hotel. I mean, this is a very prestigious event, and upfront cash outflows are huge, I would imagine. So what can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the commercial model is?
Well, we started with very, very small means, with a very big dream and a very ambitious vision, which, as you've seen, has become a reality, but with very small means. I think that people, I mean, I don't think, I know that people embraced us because they understood the importance and the need for our mission and vision. This is a world, Shane, which where our leaders... And when I say our leaders, I mean almost in every country around the world. One way or another, they have failed us. So look at what happened in Greece, you know, with the financial crisis, and how Greece, from a country which was prospering and developing, went down to its knees financially. Look at what happened to the U.S. I mean, the financial crisis 3-4 years ago, the Eurozone, I mean, the Arab world, the revolutions in the Arab world. So there is a leadership gap that exists in the world. And this is not because suddenly, you know, our leaders have become incompetent. It is because our world is changing, it is transforming rapidly. So leaders have been caught off guard and they do not know how to manage this change effectively. There is also another change that relates to people and human networks and how technology has enabled people to take power in their own hands. All right? So this is an entirely new reality. When Global Thinkers Forum arrived, we said that this is a reality, we need to embrace it, and we need to create new leaders, the leaders of tomorrow.
This is Elizabeth Filippulli, founder and chief executive officer of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum, talking about her vision forward for leaders of tomorrow in the Middle East and specifically Arab women leaders in the region. We'll hear more from her in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and chief executive officer of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum. She is a graduate of Oxford University and London City University. She has her background in journalism, having worked for both Al Jazeera English and CNN. Welcome back, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Shane.
I guess I did just want to, because other people want to do events and stuff like how you've done it. But the thing is getting off the ground. I mean, even if you do have the network of business people who could, you know, come and attend the event, getting off the ground commercially, what would your advice be to anyone who was also kind of aspiring to do a similar event? How would you go about setting up the financial side of it?
So as I said before, this is a concept on which we have been working on for 5 years before its launch. Also, let me say that Global Thinkers is our commercial firm. So we are strategic advisors and we help companies with leadership development, with organizational transformation in order to boost performance and to maximize profits. And this is our money-making model for global thinkers. It's a service that we're now bringing to Dubai and to the Arab world, to the Middle East, by opening our office in Dubai. Now, Global Thinkers financed Global Thinkers Forum, which is our non-profit think tank. Okay. This is how we started. So the seed funds were provided by Global Thinkers. From then onwards, we developed a model which has different revenue streams. So sponsors, of course, are one of them. Companies who are interested in becoming part of our vision and our mission, because it can be under the CSR, corporate social responsibility, or they are interested in being part of the conversation and become partners in order to benefit from the business networking that we offer, from the exposure, the international exposure that we offer, they join us as sponsors. And then, depending on the event, we might have ticket sales, or we might have an event which is free of charge. So, for example, here in Dubai, a few months ago, we hosted an event co-hosted with Google and Oasis 500, Women, Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And we did not charge anything because it had an educational character and we wanted to benefit as many women as possible. And it was an event that initially we were expecting 60 people and we had 100 and people were standing. So it's a mixed model.
Well, I have to say I really admire what you're doing, and it seems like it's something that's really needed. And I think one of the catchphrases I saw on your website was, you know, the need to create a leadership ecosystem. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's a world which is changing very, very fast. And to a great extent, this is because of technology. And innovation, of course. So technology has transformed the way we work, the way we act, the way we behave. Now, young people, and not so young people, are always, you know, in their smartphones and sending texts or browsing or communicating with the world in unprecedented ways. And so this has created an entirely new environment, which is unthinkable. Go 10 years back. It's a completely different world. So these changes, of course, through innovation and through technology, have created new trends. And these new trends are quite unpredictable. So we have things, for example, and phenomena that did not exist before, like hacktivism.
Hacktivism, okay.
You know? Or we have phenomena like WikiLeaks. And I'm referring to different, you know, newbies, newcomers that affect our societies, that affect leadership in different ways, both positive and negative. So we have these new dynamics, and we need to create an ecosystem that will somehow absorb these new dynamics in productive ways. So we need to create leaders that will be able to understand those trends, to understand those phenomena, how they affect politics, business, society, academia, how we can create new thinking and see how we navigate and we find ourselves and we progress in a world that has changed and take advantage of the new opportunities that are offered through technology and overcome obstacles that are created because of technology or because, you know, of this new reality.
Is it just a technology issue, though? Because I think when you look at the Middle Eastern geography, Middle East, North African geography, they have not really had a leadership dialogue. If you go back and you say, who are your favorite Arab leaders of the past century? You know, you have Sheikh Zayed, Sheikh Mohammed. There's a couple, maybe Salahuddin. There's very few. If, you know, I ask you who's George Washington, for example, we all know who he is. We're not Americans. You know, that kind of leadership dialogue is so thick and so robust in America. Don't you think that's one of the key differentiators in terms of, you know, driving a nation forward, that, you know, you really need to develop leaders, not just, you know, in terms of what you're saying is understanding the complexities of markets, economies, and politics, but at the very root of it, If the Arab world is not even discussing or not does not have an active leadership dialogue, is that not a major issue?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are, of course, other, there have been other visionary leaders in the Arab world. For example, the late King Hussein has been one of them. But the leadership issue and how we approach it has different, if you like, connotations or interpretations. So, for example, it's also the era and the social circumstances that develop a leader. In the West, the big ideologies, so like, you know, the East and West clash has collapsed. So in the 1980s, there was the Cold War, which at the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s had disappeared. And this completely changed the leadership landscape. So suddenly we had two big poles competing with each other, fighting each other, two very influential ideologies which were dominating in the world that kind of disappeared or started vanishing. This created a new reality for leaders in the West primarily. So the Eurozone, the concept of collaboration, the concept of unity, creating, you know, a united currency for Europe. Ideas like collaboration and unity prevailed. And suddenly, leaders, instead of, you know, representing very big ideologies, they turned into managers. They became, in a way, executives. And the countries became brands. And societies and people became, in a way, staff. I'm oversimplifying here, but just to give the concept and to give, you know, the picture of how things changed and transitioned from what were, you know, the representatives of big ideologies that, you know, had to do with history and background and also political ideas and social clashes, and how these faded out in the name of collaboration and in the name of unity. This when it comes to the West. In the Arab world, it's a different story. Because in the Arab world, as you know, to a great extent, it has always been a political system of dictatorships, of leaders who are rulers, who are not elected by people. And some of them are visionary or have been visionary leaders, and they have created amazing things and amazing works for the countries. But some of them, not that much. And so people started, you know, being upset, angry, outraged. And at some point they felt that, like, you know, we want to get rid of them. They're not doing good for their people. We are not progressing. We are not developing. We are not having opportunities. We need to change the establishment and the status quo. So in this very weird environment, if you like, leaders both in the West and in the Arab world and the world over found themselves in new realities. This is where technology comes in, and social media, and how people suddenly, the bottom of the pyramid, became empowered more than ever before. They became part of the dialogue. They became active and dynamic participants of the conversation, and they created an ecosystem where power is not top-down anymore, but it is bottom-up. So for the first time in history, leaders are more accountable, whether they are elected or not elected. They are more accountable towards people more than ever before in human history.
And so to deal with this new reality, that's what your forum looks at, is what skills did the leader need now to deal with a much more visible and vocal bottom class?
Absolutely. It's about creating more understanding between leaders. It's creating new knowledge. It is creating opportunities for leaders to listen to new ideas, learn, and exchange ideas, and be, if you like, more understanding of what the people need. Because if they are not more understanding, then it's going to be difficult for them.
And so where do you see, I mean, there's obviously you're taking a broad brush stroke across the Middle East and North Africa, which is, you know, vastly from country to country, very significantly. But it really seems that the base or foundation stone of leadership is really the United Arab Emirates in the region.
I think that, you know, what is happening in the United Arab Emirates for the last, I don't know, 20 years or more, 30 years perhaps, it's an amazing miracle. So, I mean, here, His Highness Sheikh Maktoum is an exemplary visionary leader. The growth, the development, the dynamism, the buzz, the international mindedness that exists, you know, in Dubai and, you know, in the Emirates, I think it is unprecedented.
This is Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and CEO of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum, giving her insights into the leadership context of the Middle East. She'll be sharing more of her insights in just a minute, so stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I am here with Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and CEO of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum. She is a graduate of Oxford University and London City University with a background in journalism, having worked for both Al Jazeera and CNN. Elizabeth, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
So you were talking a little bit about how we are almost at a milestone moment in leadership development in the Middle East, North African region, and kind of leading the vanguard is the United Arab Emirates. And you said that, you know, the 21st century is really lending itself to more of a value-based leadership model. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think it is all about values. It is about creating a system of values that represent us as individuals, and they represent, or if you like, they reflect the reason, the purpose of our existence. And what I mean by that is that each one of us, Shane, if you think about it, there are some specific values that are very important for each and every one of us. One might say that, you know, for me is family and integrity and honesty and giving back to society and fairness. For someone else could be something, you know, could be a set of different values. So it could be, for example, collaboration and innovation and teamwork and openness. No matter what those or how different those values are for each person, they bring us under the same umbrella of a values-based existence. And when we operate under these values, under such values, we are better people. So we need to identify what the values that we stand for are and how we can create positive change and a better world through these values. I mentioned before about our work as global thinkers and how we work with companies to help them create a shared values system and adopt it so that they can engage their employees, they can engage their partners better, and they can maximize their performance. Those values, which are individual, they are personal values, it is very important that we bring them into whatever we do, whether we run a business, whether we're journalists, or whether, you know, we run a nonprofit like Global Thinkers Forum, it is very, very important to have those values permeate the organization. When you do that, you instantly gain a level of appeal, because people, each and every one of us, the main guide in life is our existence, our soul. How can we keep our inner part, our inner soul, at peace with everything that we do? And we can only be at peace with ourselves and with, you know, the universe when we know that we have a purpose in life, and this purpose is to serve our family, is to serve society, is to serve humanity. Exactly the same goes for a company. or an organization, for a leader.
So you're saying that the majority of people now are working in what they view as their life's purpose?
They should do. They should do. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the hierarchy of needs, the pyramid, Abraham Maslow's pyramid, which is about, you know, what we need as human beings to survive. So on the basis of the pyramid, we need, you know, food and water and clean air. Then on a second level, we need a shelter. If we have secured our food and water, we need to have a house around us, something to protect us. On a third level, we need relationships, our families, our friends, you know, the people that surround us and love us. On a fourth level, we need the self-esteem, we need respect, we need appreciation for what we do as professionals and as people. And then on the top level, it's the self-actualization, which is, what is your purpose in life? What are you here for? For someone could be, you know, to be dedicated to their families and to bring to the world children and to grow them up, to bring them up as exemplary people, for example, or as well-educated people. For someone else who's a successful business person, it might be to create a very big international, you know, company. And for a third person who's an artist, it could be to create, you know, art, sculptures. It doesn't matter what it is. It's a matter of identifying our purpose in life and how we can follow it. It's the passion. It's the dream.
What is your advice to anybody who wants to become self-actualized?
No matter what field or industry they are in, we all need to take a step back from time to time, reflect on our past life, reflect on our mistakes, our wrongdoings, and our achievements. All of us, you know, have a good track record in all these areas. And then assess the things that we've done right and the things that we've done wrong, how we can learn from both, and how we can become better people.
So this is really focused on making sure you have that gratifying, fulfilling life. Is the key to that is becoming self-actualized.
Very much so, yes.
But unfortunately, the majority of people never not only reach that, but they don't strive for it either.
Well, I cannot generalize, because each and every one of us has its own, you know, we have our own journeys. And so where we find meaning is something very individual, very personal. But I think that life, our lives are so demanding. And sometimes, you know, look at what is going on in the Arab world, in the majority, you know, of the Arab countries. People are very, you know, they are impoverished. Sometimes they are desperate. Sometimes they see no future. So there really is no time for them to take a step back and reflect, you know, back on their lives and how they can create this self-actualization. So I cannot generalize. I'm just saying that it is important that all of us try to find a meaning that feeds our soul, whatever that meaning may be.
And as a business leader, your business as well needs to have a soul, I guess, as you're saying, and should be towards a greater purpose than just the bottom line.
Totally, 100%. This is what differentiates good companies from great companies. Great companies are those that have a soul. They have a purpose in life. They give back to society. They ensure their resilience, sustainability, and caring for their people and for humanity as well. So caring for humanity could mean that they take care of, you know, look after the environment, or they look after people who are less privileged, or they give money back to groups of people who need it, or they create schools, or they adopt orphans. I mean, there are a number of initiatives that are there for companies to give back to society and to humanity.
And this you're saying then would graft onto their financial performance. So we would assume that those companies that are, say, for example, the Fortune 500 10 most profitable companies would have a soul and echo this, or you're saying this is a separate set of metrics.
It's a separate.
That is a new beginning, that the triple bottom line organization is completely separate from, say, our capital markets and everything else, which is the new generation of empathetic workers are now looking for.
Exactly. I mean, it's separate, Shane. It's not about profit making only. It's about giving back. Companies and organizations are representations, or you know, representatives of their leadership, and the leader has to care about the people and has to care about humanity. So this is, as I said before, what differentiates a good company, which can be a profitable company, from a great company, that it is profitable but gives back to society, to people, to the world. There is a huge difference there.
Absolutely.
And what we do as global thinkers, and I'm referring to the commercial part now, not the forum, which is our nonprofit, we help companies understand what their existing values system is, if it is engaging their employees, if it is meaningful for their employees, and if not, we help them overcome this cultural disorder, as we call it, which is measurable, and it has it affects profits, and create an organization and a company that will give its best, both in performance and profit making, but also for its people and the people and the society around us.
Well, thank you so much. We seem to be running slightly out of time, but you, on one hand, are running an event for successful business leaders who are female, but you are actually also a big inspiration with, you know, your huge accomplishments, both in journalism and as a businesswoman, starting your own communications firm and also now leading this phenomenal event. What's your advice to any women out there who want to get the next rung in their professional development?
To be fearless. I think that overcoming one's fears is the number one step and halfway to what, you know, one wants to achieve. What holds us back is the fear or insecurity or lack of self-confidence. There are so many things that we can achieve if we overcome this initial hurdle of fear. So be fearless, ladies.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. Hopefully we can have you on the show again sometime soon.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
That was Elizabeth Filippulli, the founder and chief executive officer of Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, saying make sure the rest of your life is the best of your life.